Okay.
Okay. Hi, Elizabeth. Do you mind introducing yourself?
Sure. I'm Elizabeth. I'm an artist from the States. Born in California and grew up in the Midwest in Minneapolis. And I've lived in Asia for the last 6 years. And I'm an artist, travel writer, and photographer. So all three of those kind of define what I am and how I do what I do. So part of the time I'm making images, and the other part of the time I'm writing. And the two really relate together, even though they're different parts of the brain.
Okay, great. So you have a very untraditional, like not only are you an independent artist and writer, but you're also location independent. So can you describe what it's like to kind of split your home between different countries?
Yeah, and it's evolved over the last, say, 10 years. I've been traveling pretty consistently for at least several months a year for the last 11 years. My passport is just, they're fat, they're full of so many different stamps. It's easy in some ways, and it's really tough to travel as an artist because it depends on your equipment. I actually had to change the materials that I use because I travel so much. I used to do a kind of painting called encaustic, which is with hot wax. And it's a beautiful kind of lustrous finish that you get, but it's so cumbersome to take those paints around the world that it's just impossible. I mean, I remember taking them through the train station in Beijing and just crying because they were so heavy. And even with this particular trip where I've gone to, I don't know, four countries over the last 6 months, and I'm finally settling into a studio in southwestern China, I have a lot of crap that I carry that a lot of your average traveler doesn't. And also, I feel that I don't really have any one particular home. Home is wherever I am. So my partner is English. We met in Asia. And we're looking at, where is home? And we still don't know. I'm actually in the process of buying a little studio in Sicily, in southern Sicily. So that's going to make life even more complicated. trying to spend a few months a year there and maybe put down some roots and stuff. So.
So, as far as selling your work and kind of networking with other people, is that more difficult because you're moving around?
I would say in some ways it's better because I actually get face-to-face interaction with people in different art markets in different countries. So I have significant contacts in Hong Kong, in Hanoi, and Bangkok. And I was only in Sydney for 2 months, but I'll be going back there pretty soon. So I hope to develop some there. But in other ways, it's quite difficult at the moment being in China. With the current political situation, Twitter's blocked, Facebook's blocked, the proxies that I was using are no longer working. And it's been a huge, actually, stumbling block because I was just the social media aspect of what I do was becoming quite important in terms of networking, not just with arts people, but with writers and people based in the region. So I'll get more active on that when I leave China. And for the next time I'm here, I'll have some more, kind of fallback options prepared.
Yeah, so can you describe how social networking plays into your whole art process?
It's definitely my N word, networking. That's pretty much how I do it. It could be because I don't really have any face-to-face social skills, so I'm getting less and less certain of that. I don't know. But it's just amazing because it allows me to meet so many interesting people that I could never otherwise even meet or even know about. And
Yeah.
to see what they do and how they go about doing what they do is just, it's really inspirational. And I've had invitations to do things in different countries where the logistics just don't work out, but it's great to even be invited to, be a part of some of these exhibitions.
So, do you connect a lot with artists and writers, or do you also connect with people who are more interested in buying your stuff?
Because my artwork, at least in the last, say, 5 years, has been very location specific. I mean, when I'm living a place, I make artwork and write about that place. So the collectors, the people who collect that work, they tend to have some sort of connection with it. Either they're from there, or they've lived there for a while, or they're interested in that place. And I meet those people usually online. I haven't had a whole lot of gallery shows. I'm not interested in galleries. So most of the connections or collectors I have are people that I've met personally through other people. My artwork is relatively reasonably priced because when I make multiples or I do work on paper, it's not as expensive as, say, an oil painting on canvas. That's a whole different question, the pricing question. But so collectors who would consider themselves, beginning collectors can generally afford my work, whereas, if I were to do more expensive media, they couldn't afford it.
Right. Yeah, I noticed on your blog you have a really nice mix of writing about like the process of your art and also the places where you are, so some travel writing. So I guess that probably helps people who are interested in a certain place connect with your work.
Definitely, I think, I'm honestly really not very, I have not been as diligent as I should be in terms of, being aware of keywords and stuff, but people find me, my publisher found me through my blog, and pretty much all the great stuff that has happened to me has happened through my blog, which I consider an online portfolio of my writing and these weird experiences that I happen to have, like teaching photography in Cambodia and just the other different projects that I've done. It documents them there, and some people have said they read it from beginning to end for the last 6 years, in
Wow.
one go. I'm like, how can you handle that? I couldn't even handle it. So I think they have a lot of free time.
So besides the blog, what other social networking things do you use?
I've been using Facebook for a couple of years now. I actually don't focus on that as much. It's more Twitter that I've been doing lately. I haven't focused on getting a whole lot of followers. If I find somebody interesting, I follow them, and interesting people seem to find me. And I've been doing it really organically. I'm not into the whole, oh, let me try and get 1,000 followers right away. I think I've got about 300 or something, and that's even more than I can really follow effectively. When I get back, I'll have to manage things better with some sort of software. With my computer being broken at the moment, that's pretty tough.
Yeah, you're still managing your location-independent art business, even though you're got your internet blocked and all every computer broken.
Yeah, I mean, at least some pretty important people in terms of getting this project done that I've been working on, they're in Hong Kong and San Francisco, so they're pretty easy to access online. And like my word editor lives in Bangkok, and my visual editor lives in San Francisco, and my publisher's in Hong Kong, and I'll be seeing him in about 2 weeks. So it's great that everybody's pretty much location independent, and so we all understand the occasional trials that come along with that.
Yeah, of course. So, what kind of set you off on this path of doing independent work and also doing traveling while you're doing it? What kind of triggered all that?
Yeah, my first actual, I mean, when I was really young, like 1 to 3 years old, we lived in Strasbourg, France, which is where my dad got his PhD in Catholic theology, of all obscure things. My mom was a nun, and so, the whole Catholic kind of Europhile thing was very much seen growing up. And so, as soon as I was able to, I wanted to be able to travel, but the finances were just pretty tough. So, during university, I managed to finagle doing my own study abroad program in Strasbourg for a semester. And doing that for 6 months and doing it for half the price of a regular study abroad program really gave me the confidence that, okay, I can do this. I can make art. I was making art to send home to my professors, who gave me grades for credit while I studied French over there. And it really gave me the confidence to say, okay, I can do this. And then the next summer, I went over to Liverpool and had two internships, one with the Children's Art Charity and another with the Liverpool Biennial and the Fringe Festival. And that as well, I didn't make art when I was there, but I got experience in the art world and got to know a bit how it worked. And then the following year, I had an apprenticeship in Italy with a sculptor. So doing all those things, making art while traveling, studying, that's what I wanted to combine and keep doing for the rest of my life, I guess. And then when I moved over to Asia, that was quite a different proposition. My goal was actually to save up for a little house in Morocco. I had this dream of living on the West Coast and making art and, speaking French to local people. I don't know what I was thinking. So I moved to Asia. I thought, okay, I should try a different part of the world. Korea seemed like an interesting place, good English and art teaching possibilities. And so I guess it's been a combination of kind of calculated recklessness that has led me on all these kind of different paths. And just the one regret that I have, because one of the questions was, you know, any mistakes that you've made. I've made loads, but probably a big one was when I lived in New York in 2001, and then when I lived in Korea, I pretty much stopped making art, which is a big, big problem. You can't stop making it. You know, I was really discouraged. I didn't have any space, and, you know, I was in a bad kind of place. And so that's probably one thing that if I could do over again, I would keep making it on paper, whatever it took, with whatever kind of space I had available.
Mm-hmm. Do you find that it takes a lot of persistence sometimes to keep producing, even when you're encountering, you know, difficult situations or even difficult just like living conditions?
Definitely. In the last 2 years, I've come to realize that I can't ignore the writing either. So, for example, for the last 4 months, I've been focusing on writing, note-taking, totally on the road. There was no way I could make art because every day I had my agenda. I was going to this village or this town, traveling like crazy to Thailand and Vietnam. There was no way I could make art. So what I did throughout that way was gather images for the art that I'm making now.
Mm-hmm.
But I had a kind of reassurance, okay, this is, I'm going to get some images out of this. But the writing was, it was quite difficult to do on the road as well. Sure, note-taking, but even collating it into something cohesive, you know, say the first draft for this book was pretty tough while on the road because in Southeast Asia, as you know, that experiences can be so intense with the food, with the people, being on a motorbike all day, you're freaking exhausted when you get back. You just want to go to bed. But you've got your notes put together while they're still fresh, and you've got to do that. So, but I think it's good discipline. If you've got discipline in the studio, you can do it while on the road. It's just two different kinds of discipline, and I'm not very good with routines, so I actually kind of prefer the on the road kind of discipline where things kind of come at you and you just deal with them as they come.
Yes. So what would you say is one of the more difficult things that you've had to change as you focus on creating a lifestyle that allows you to do your art and make money from your art and your writing?
You know, those dirty words, networking and marketing, for so long. I mean, I grew up as the daughter of Catholic intellectuals who were just, they were in their, and they still are, I love them, but they're in their own little liberal arts world. You know, they're teachers, professors, and that's what my brothers and sisters are as well. And they don't have to market their work, and that was just seen as that's what business people do. I gradually, over time, over the last, say, 5 years, have come around, but especially 3 years ago when I moved to Hong Kong, that's when I finally realized, when I saw how everybody was working, and not just the art world, but how everybody works, everything's about networking there and about marketing. And you know what? It's okay. It's not a bad thing. It's basically, marketing is just, I talk about my work a lot. And I don't even think of it as marketing. It's connecting with people. It's meeting interesting people. People are interested in what you do, and you're interested in what they do. And that's all it is. I don't really think about it as marketing and networking. It's more just who might be interested in what I'm up to, okay, and why, and what are they doing? I'd like to know more about what they do. And so it's a two-way thing. It's not just one way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people, artists, for example, when they're thinking about marketing and networking, it might be easy to worry about, like, well, who should I market to? Who should I be talking to? And trying to understand who they should target. Have you found that there's a specific audience or specific groups that you try to connect with, or does it happen more broadly and organically?
It's been so far quite organically, but I do feel like I should be more organized about it. So far, again, like I said, a lot of my work has been very place-specific, so people that travel to those places or have some interest in those places, they'll think, oh, wow, that's cool, or, you know, a series that I just did on Vietnam that I haven't is on a spiritual space. So I think that will probably reach beyond just people who are interested in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying, I'm not changing my work, but I'm just becoming aware that, okay, having my work focused on one place is kind of inherently limiting, you know, and I need to broaden things a bit more. The Calendar Girl series that I've I started 2 years ago and then put on hold for a while, and I'll be continuing again next month. That I'm really happy about because I feel that that reaches beyond simply Asia, and it reaches more people. I'm not doing it to reach more people. I feel like I'm maturing a bit more, and my work is maturing a bit more, and so it can go beyond simply the idea of place.
So, can you describe the projects that you're currently working on?
Yeah, I'm currently putting the writing on hold for The Paper Apprentice, which is my book that I'll be working on pretty soon, about my travels through Thailand, Laos, and Vietnam, meeting paper makers, working with them, and talking to them about what they do and how they do it. It's a very traditional kind of, it's a traditional part of the culture, and it's dying out, but I'm not going to get too precious about, that aspect of it. It's been very commercialized successfully in other ways, like in Thailand and Laos. So I've got the writing project, and then I'm doing illustrations for it at the moment. I need to turn them in about 2 weeks so I can get paid for them. And then when I go back to Sydney, yeah, I'll be writing that book, working on the Calendar Girl series, which my goal is to get quite a bit more of that completed by the end of the year so we can actually publish a calendar of it, kind of a large-scale calendar and other products with that. And then for next year, I've been approached about doing some writing about Southeast Asia, which we've been coming back there again, and I'll be renovating the studio in Sicily for a couple months, and I don't know, there's just a lot going on. There's also discussions about doing more stuff in southwestern China. So there's a lot being discussed at the moment, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens.
Yeah, can you tell? I know I really like your Calendar Girls series, but people listening might not know. So can you describe that a little bit, that project?
The imagery from that was inspired by the poster girls that you would see. Often the girls in Shanghai in the 20s to the 40s, they're glamorous, advertising things like cigarettes or mint or medicine, and they'd be posed in these, very sexy kind of gowns that they were form-fitting and kind of long. And so the imagery of that was very compelling to me. It was inspired by also living in Hong Kong and seeing how advertising pervades everything. Hong Kong's number one art form is advertising. And coming from America, where probably one of our number one art forms is also advertising, I mean, people respect us around the world for it. Whether I appreciate that or not, that's just how it is, I think. That really got me thinking about, okay, what sells? What's appealing about this? Why am I even drawn to it, even though I'm not particularly attracted to women? And then what are these women thinking as they're sitting there posed? Because in the 20s and 30s at the time, just like now, women were maybe on the surface kind of liberated, but we still had, and they still had, things going on inside that, oh, you can't really talk about difficulties with men or, it's, yeah. So it's just kind of getting into the minds of women within Asia and the West and seeing that we have a lot in common then and now.
So, on the more technical side, when you do a project like this, would you normally just offer originals, or do you do prints as well? I know you said you're looking to do an actual calendar for this.
For through my website and through myself personally, I only sell originals and handmade prints, like my blueprints. In terms of the what do you call it, artificial, the machine-made prints, that's my publisher's job. I leave that all to him because not only is it quite an expensive investment, it's in doing high-quality printing rather than digital printing. It's also something that I don't want to dilute my focus on selling the original work. So he'll pay me a usage fee for using these images and the illustrations, which is usually, 20 to 30% above what the standard is, because he's a generous kind of guy. And then he uses the images and makes them and sells them. And basically, I see that as, hey, my portfolio is going in people's homes that might never have seen it at all. They've just done a deal with Ingram in the States, which is a pretty big distributor. So they're actually looking for more non-book items, of which some of these might be part of that kind of catalog.
Oh, that's great. So yeah, it sounds like you have kind of very different streams of income. Do you
Yep.
Do you find that has been really helpful for keeping a stable income and stable lifestyle?
For sure. Not only do you know Hugh MacLeod, who does the Gaping Void blog, and he writes a lot
Yeah.
about. I've been reading him for a couple of years now, and he talks about crofting, which is what his grandfather or dad used to do in northern Scotland. Where they go out on these farms, they do something different every day, and so they're not doing the same thing every day. Life is interesting. It's they got loads of different things to do, and that's kind of how I see my life and what I'm doing. Like in the past year, some of the different things I've some different ways I've made money with translating colonial French into English, writing lots of different online articles, done a photo book, painting workshops, at this advance for the paper apprentice for the travel and the writing, which is kind of different advances. So in a way, these different streams of income from different people have helped me recession-proof my income. But the biggest thing that's helped is because I don't have an expensive studio in a first-world city like New York or London. Because I look at those, I lived in New York in 2001, and the done thing when you're an American artist is you graduate with your BFA or MFA, and then you move to the New York area, you get an expensive studio, you go to lots of different openings, and you try and climb your way up the ladder. But I realized when I was there, I'm not interested in ladders, and I feel like my future lies outside of America. So I just thought, okay, this isn't for me. What am I going to do? I don't know. But having studios in different places around the world, more affordable, low cost, combining them with living space even, has been a way to really reduce my overhead, which I think is kind of crucial, especially when you're youngish.
So did you, when you were in New York, did you decide that that traditional ladder, that it wasn't for you, in general, or just that it wasn't for you, like in the States?
Both in a way, because I feel that the ladder available for artists in the States is more rigid than what I see in Europe. Part of why I'm buying a studio in Sicily is to get a foothold in Europe. I'm pretty comfortable in Asia, and I definitely plan on getting more contacts here, especially in China. But in Europe, I'm interested in the way that the European art and gallery system works. I find that it's more flexible, more international. Maybe it's definitely cronyist, but it's a bit less so. And also, the traditional gallery system anyway. I'm not. It's changing. I don't know what it's going to be like in 10 years. Certainly not the way it is now. So I'm just kind of keeping an eye on that and seeing how it goes. But I do prefer marketing my own work to individuals by myself.
Do you feel like that gives you more artistic freedom?
Not so much more artistic freedom, because I feel that I would be pretty free no matter what. And if I did change my work too much to market it, then it wouldn't really be my own. But I do feel it gives me a lot of flexibility and ownership for what I do, a lot of responsibility. And some days it's hard. But because my income is quite widely dispersed, at least at this time, and I'm hoping to increase that, I don't have to worry about it. Some people, they teach for their day job, they teach art, and they make it at night. And for me, I do writing, which is just the other part of my brain, creative part of the brain.
Yeah, it's pretty ideal. So when you're selling your art online, have you ever encountered objections as far as people who aren't willing to pay as much online because they haven't seen it in real life, for example?
I think, most of my collectors have been people who've seen something in person, or they're in the region. I do tend to sell more in person, more to people I've met in person, definitely. I think that's really crucial, and I think it will remain so for quite a while. I mean, the thing about people investing in art, because it really is an investment, is when you look at the materials that go into it, I don't know, a piece of my artwork, the materials might be, I don't know, $10. For somebody who does oil on canvas, it might be at the most 15. But we're selling this work for a lot more. So what is there to justify this high price? A lot of it is scarcity and exclusivity, and some of it has to do with making it one of a kind. Others of it is your reputation. You know, okay, is this person going to be producing work consistently? Are their prices going to rise? It's a kind of a gamble. People gamble on their work if they're real collectors, you know.
Yeah.
So you make sure that it's worth it to them, and that you use high quality art materials that are not going to fall apart, and that you connect with people consistently, keep making work, and raise your prices over time.
So, as far as consistency, what are some ways that you think you demonstrate that you show that to people who are looking at your artwork?
I think one of the ways that I have done it not so successfully is when I raised my prices too quickly. Because galleries realize that if they go up too fast, then it starts to look like speculation. And so even if some people are willing to pay it, people who might have bought it before, they're going to kind of hold off and wait. So I try not to increase my prices more than, say, 10% per year at this point. But I do have a bit of difficulty with that because when I work in different media, like when I'm doing a blueprint, which is a kind of handmade photograph, I will charge less for that because, not because the process is easier, but because you can make multiples of that. Whereas if I make a one of a kind image, then that is, you know, it just takes more time to produce one image. So I
Yeah.
do have to charge more for that. And sometimes people don't always understand that, especially if they're young collectors.
Now, if you're as far as consistency and how much you produce or how often you're creating, how do you feel that people can keep track of like what you're working on and how do you demonstrate that consistency?
I've actually been a little ambivalent about that because traditionally the way to go is, as an artist, you don't put a lot of work online until you show it, because otherwise, why would people come to your show? But so what artists do is they'll create a series for a year and they don't put any of that work online. Maybe they'll put some preparatory sketches or something, and then they have their big show, and that's when everything is unveiled, and then they can put it online. I've worked that way in the past. But I'm realizing that with a broader audience online in different countries who maybe can't go to see the show, maybe they want to see a bit more. And so I've been trying to figure out ways to make that balance happen a bit more so people can actually see that I am making something. Like with these illustrations for the book, I can't really release them anywhere until they're actually published. So there is a bit of a limitation on that. So I just talk about, oh yeah, I'm doing an illustration of this today, but I can't show anybody images of it unless it's privately.
Right, but you mean talking about it on your blog?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The problem with the blog now as well is it's on Blogspot, which is banned here in China. So I've moved to WordPress, but haven't been able to publicize that yet. Through my husband, who's going to be my proxy on Twitter and stuff, I'll start talking about that at least once a day.
Ooh, so complicated.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess to wrap up, I just wanted to talk a little bit about it seems as though your travels and your art really feed each other. And I saw the title of your blog is Travel for Artists and Art for Everyone. So I just wanted to hear your some thoughts about how travel and this idea of independence and freedom, how that all plays into your artistic flow.
You know, I think it was probably about 6 years ago, shortly after I moved to Asia, that I started realizing, okay, you know, yeah, I love making this art. I love. That's how I would talk about it back then. Now it's just, I make it, that's what I do. Yeah, I love making this art. I love writing. But the biggest thing that I'm creating is my life. And now people are calling that lifestyle design, which is great. I'm glad people are talking about it and thinking about it. But for the last 10 years, I've been kind of making my own life and making loads of mistakes along the way, but just deciding, okay, what are my own priorities in this particular situation? Okay, a lot of people, they would have gone out and buy a car when they were 19, but I decided to pay for my own schooling instead. I thought, oh, the cost will be about the same, and it was. To get back to art and travel, part of why I wrote Art for Everyone is because I feel that my art can appeal to lots of different kinds of people. I think I used to draw a real dichotomy between the art world and real people, and I'm being that way a little bit less so now that I'm meeting lots of different kinds of art world people. But I still do feel that my work, because it's more illustrative, can appeal to people on a primal level. And so even if people don't necessarily have a lot of interest in, I don't know, Shanghai in the 30s, they can still be interested in some of my images, or they'll be interested in the birds, even if they think the images are too realistic. So travel and arts, I just feel that it's all about expanding the mind, because you're confronted with things, senses, tastes, everything that you would never be confronted at back home, wherever home is. So I feel that the two are kind of, they're defining for my life, and as I look to set up the life on another continent, I hope to be able to keep doing that effectively.
That's great. Well, thanks so much for making time for me while you're in your studio in China.
Thanks. Thanks so much for calling. I appreciate it with the Skype difficulties and everything.
No, this has been great. Thanks so much. Yeah.
And all right. Hope to stay in touch, and let me know how everything goes.
Okay. Bye, Elizabeth.
Bye, Zoe.